Now, today, this morning, I intend to question this sort of attitude. First of all, let us try to understand the historical sources of our current devaluation of ritual. I would say there are two sources. The first source is to be found in classical rationalism, and the second in early psychoanalysis. Of these two, rationalism and psychoanalysis, rationalism has the longer history. Rationalism, we may say, goes back about 200 years back into the 18th century. And rationalism, on the religious side, tried to reduce religion to morality, tried to abolish anything, as it were, supernatural, anything metaphysical, anything really spiritual, tried to reduce religion to a matter of personal and social morality. In fact, rationalism, as its very name suggests, in those days, was hostile to all non-rational elements. In those days, people knew nothing about the subconscious and the unconscious and all that, and it was quite easy in those days for the rationalists and the great thinkers of the Enlightenment period in France and England and Germany to discount all the non-rational elements and reduce, as I've said, religion to a matter of private and public morality. And they were especially against such colourful things as ritual and ceremonies, and also against any kind of doctrinal precision or dogma. So many of us are still living to some extent on this heritage of rationalism and 18th century enlightenment, and we inherit, therefore, this attitude of hostility to the non-rational elements in religion, and especially to ritual. Now, early psychoanalysis is comparatively recent, as we saw the other day. It dates only from the beginning of this century. But why should psychoanalysis be concerned with ritual? It seems a little bit odd. You can't imagine, say, Freud indulging in any ritual. So how does psychoanalysis come to be concerned with ritual? Now, psychoanalysis, among other things, studied the behavior of neurotic patients. You all know what a neurotic person is. You may not be able to define one clinically, but you can recognize the type when you meet them. So psychoanalysis studied neurotic patients, neurotic individuals. And it discovered that some kinds of neurotics perform private rituals. Now, these private rituals of some neurotic patients had no connection with their own religious beliefs or practices. That is to say, if you were a Jew and if you were neurotic, the private ritual you performed because you were neurotic wasn't a Jewish ritual. It had nothing to do with the Jewish religion. In the same way, if you were a Catholic and neurotic, when you performed your private ritual because you were neurotic, this had nothing to do with the Catholic ritual tradition. At the same time, the private rituals of the neurotic did seem to be in many ways very similar to religious rituals. For instance, you take one very well-known, very common example, that is the ritual of compulsive washing. You might have met people like this. Some neurotics have a compulsion to go and wash. Every half an hour, in some cases, even every 10, every 5 minutes, they will go and wash their hands. Now, there's no need for this. It's not that their hands are dirty, but they feel a need to wash their hands. It may extend to other things. They may have a fanatical sort of need to keep their surroundings absolutely clean. Now, they may be always washing things, taking curtains down and washing them, putting them up again, sometimes every week. All unnecessarily, no objective necessity at all, but to satisfy a psychological need. So this is neurotic, this compulsive washing and cleaning and purifying. But the psychoanalyst, the early psychoanalyst, very quickly saw that this sort of neurotic ritual, which people engaged in compulsively, was very much like certain religious rituals of purification. In all religions, you've got rituals of purification. You've got them in Buddhism, in Hinduism, in Jainism, in Christianity. So the psychoanalyst, noticing this sort of similarity, concluded in these early days that religious ritual, a neurotic ritual, were basically of the same type. When they continued their investigations, they discovered, by probing into the depths of the mind of the neurotic person engaging in these compulsive rituals, they discovered that the washing ritual was an attempt to get rid of strong feelings of guilt. These feelings of guilt were not caused by anything that the neurotic person had actually done. It's not that they had stolen or killed anyone or done anything of that sort and therefore felt guilty. Not that at all. The feelings of guilt were caused by unconscious destructive impulses. Deep down in themselves, they had an impulse to destroy, to kill. And they felt guilt on account of this unconscious destructive impulse. And the function of the washing ritual, the compulsive washing ritual, was to undo the destruction that had been unconsciously done or unconsciously planned. In other words, they could not afford to allow the destructive impulse ever to reach consciousness. So therefore, the washing ritual was needed to cope with the feeling of guilt and to relieve the intolerable pressure and tension. So cases of this sort, Freud and his colleagues found, can be analysed, and the neurotic patient can be made aware of his or her own destructive impulses, can be made aware that this perpetual washing of hands and cleaning and purifying everything around is only to keep, as it were, the destructive impulse at bay, to prevent it from coming up into consciousness and to relieve the feeling of guilt felt unconsciously on account of those impulses. So Freud and his colleagues found that if the patient could be made aware of these unconscious destructive impulses and made aware of the connection between the compulsive ritual washing and these impulses, then, having come to terms, as it were, with themselves, having recognized what Jung was later on to call their own dark side, their own shadow, they would become free from this compulsive washing, would give it up, would no longer perform the ritual. Now, with this sort of material to hand or in mind, early psychoanalysis generalized, and it tries to explain all religious ritual on the same basis. In other words, it tended to dismiss all religious ritual whatsoever as compulsive and as neurotic. This was, of course, going too far. Psychoanalysis in its early days, we may say, was a very confident, very self-confident sort of movement, and in the first flush of early success, it made all sorts of sweeping statements and drew all sorts of rash conclusions, which later on it had to retract. So this was one of them, that all ritual, including religious ritual, was necessarily neurotic and compulsive. So even though early psychoanalysis did advance this point of view, later analysts had to retract and rather modified this view. For instance, we find that Jung and Fromm were much more sympathetic towards religious ritual than Freud and some other early psychoanalysts had been. Now, we find, in fact, that Fromm distinguishes two kinds of ritual. Fromm says ritual may be either irrational or rational. And he says further that it's only the irrational ritual which is compulsive, but not the latter, not the rational ritual. We'll return to this distinction a little later on.